Well, I don't know about you, but I was hornswoggled by this film.
That's the best we got?
That's right out of the gate?
That's what we're firing with?
Yeah, well, it's better than horny, right?
All cylinders, guys. All fucking cylinders.
We might be a little broken.
Just kill me now. You're talking way too loud.
What are you talking about, Brian? You are dead.
Way too bright in here. That would explain a lot, actually, if I were
Welcome to the afterlife, where you are still having to record reviews for one of us.
I think we're breathing too hard for Brian at the moment.
Yeah, maybe.
Can you keep it down, please?
One lung only.
Oh, you guys leave Brian alone. He's fine.
He's fine!
Oh, why?
We're here with more Fantastic Fest reviews. This one is for the new Alexandra Aja. Is it Aja or Aja?
Aja.
Aja. Film based on Joe Hill's novel Horns, starring Daniel Radcliffe as a guy who's been... The whole town believes that he raped and murdered his girlfriend, which, you know, right from the beginning, we're told, no, he did not. But he doesn't have a fucking clue who did it. And... Like, he's in misery, he's in agony from all this, because he loved her too, and suddenly he starts growing horns and having mystical powers. The end.
Like you do.
But I am Chris.
JC.
Martin.
Brian.
Richard.
And we're going to review this thing.
Yeah, here's Chris. Brilliant idea. Let's record a review the day after the closing night party of Fantastic Fest. Let's do that.
Well, I'm
awesome.
Not the one who did, like, 15 slap shots.
So. Yeah, I feel fine.
Yeah, fuck all of you.
Hear that, Brian? I feel fine.
Yeah, thanks. Why am I on the same couch?
How do you feel, Martin?
I feel fine.
Are you okay, Brian?
Brian!
All of you. You're all fired.
Someone tickle him.
Tickle the hangover right out of him.
I find your hangover cure highly suspect.
Oh, that's appropriate.
Hey, see how that works.
That's not a different podcast.
He's fine. He's still working.
Yes, this movie. Daniel Radcliffe.
It's a movie that happened.
You know what? I actually like this movie a lot. I must confess that I have not read the book on which it is, or the story on which it is based. And I heard that there were some changes that were made. But one thing I thought was interesting is, like, a complaint that people had is that it felt sort of, cause there is violence in the movie, and it's definitely an R-rated movie, but there's, I guess, a certain tameness to the violence that people thought may have been a cinematic choice. But I've talked to people who've read the book, and it's not much more graphic in the book than it is in the movie. So I don't think that was really that drastic of a change.
I don't think adding graphic violence would have added anything to this movie.
No. Yeah, but what they were saying is that it was, like, neutered. Like, the book was more violent, and they watered it down for the movie. And I was like, I don't really...
Well, okay, here's the thing. I mean, it's all about this brutal rape and murder of this girl. So having other murders, especially bloody ones, in it, would just take away from that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good point.
And a moment of silence.
Yeah. I kind of, like, signaled.
I'm very, very drunk. I don't know what to tell you. I'm still from yesterday.
You know, I agree with you, Brian. Actually, I really like this movie a lot, too. Even though, while watching it, I can see that not everybody's going to be in love with it as I was.
Yeah.
It's very early. It feels a lot like a lot of Joe Hill's work has so far, like early Stephen King, in the sense that it has these very broad concepts of good and evil and love saves all type of things that are going to just get on some people's nerves, to be sure.
The difference between Joe Hill and his dad is that you get the feeling Joe Hill likes people, where his dad, I think, you know, there's... You hate to use the term because it's kind of retroactive on this, but there is an element of torture porn about, like, how much misery can he put perfectly nice characters through in his books?
Well, he does have a book called Misery.
Yeah,
so.
Like, whereas this, you get the feeling, like, you know, you actually pull for the characters in the way that, you know, I think his father's work is a lot icier in a lot of ways. Don't make a Shining reference. Don't make me come over and then kill you.
I can't even hear you. There's just blood pooling out of my ears right now.
But yeah, this is actually, it starts off and it's a romance tragedy. You know, this guy, his girlfriend is dead and everybody thinks that he did it. And like, you know, her father, played by David Morse, who I will always watch in anything, the most unlikely violent heavy in the history of cinema. If anybody watched him on Saint Elsewhere, now he's like, he turns up with a shotgun and you go, yeah, it's David Morse. I buy that now.
Yeah.
You know, everybody hates him. And, you know, Radcliffe pulls off a decent American accent. Not dismal. Better than mine.
Yeah?
Okay. Better than yours, perhaps.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You had problems with his accent?
Because I had major problems with his accent.
I had
a problem at the beginning, because I literally, as he's doing the voiceover at the beginning, thought, oh, this takes place in Ireland.
Yeah,
he sounded
exactly.
Irish.
He sounded. He didn't sound British. Well, English at all. He sounded Irish the whole time, and it made me go like, "Well, where is this movie taking place exactly?
But fucking Canada."
But he's adorable. Don't you just want to like hold him and go, "It's gonna be all right, Harry. It's gonna be all right."
It's one of those things where like I liked him as a character and I liked his acting. But his accent just bugged me to no end.
Apparently he never learned the Accio accent spell at Hogwarts. What, really?
Yes.
Fuck you.
Curl really? Back up into your ball, Brian. I think, like, as an actor, I mean, regardless how you feel about the accent, I think he really did do a good job. Your heart is bleeding for this guy, you know? I mean, who is... Everyone, I mean, even his own parents are looking at him askance. We're like, "Oh, we support you. I'm not going to
really,
touch you." And you know, I mean, you think things can't get any worse, but when these horns start growing out of his head, you know, which is weird enough already because everyone looks at him as a devil, and suddenly he's got real horns that also give him the power to, whenever he's around anyone, they say whatever the darkest shit they're actually thinking.
Yeah, they'll even do kind of whatever he says.
Yeah, he figures out, too, he can command them to do stuff, even if it's, like, stuff that is not in their best interest.
If it's in any way confessional, they seem to be pliable to that.
Think about Unbreakable, but played for laughs. It's like suddenly he knows the darkest, most horrible thing about their life, whether he wants to or not.
And, you know, it ends up with a lot of interesting confrontations, some of which are just horrible to him. Like, I mean, having his own parents tell him, "I just wish you would go away or die or something."
Right.
You know, and some are very useful as he starts to finesse these powers and goes, "You know what? This could actually help me figure out who actually killed my girlfriend." You know, that being said, there's a couple different people who seem like likely suspects, but when it came down to it, I was pretty sure it was who it ended up being.
Well, I think when I have three big problems with this movie. And one being that who we find out is the killer, it's pretty obvious from early on. If you're any kind of, you know,
seem like
study
the
of
most
mystery
likely.
Stories. Yeah. It's always like, okay, why is there this one main character that barely gets focused on who, when I check through my brain, he completely could have done it. He's the one.
The movie tries to do just enough to throw you off base, but going, "Oh, come on, the least likely guy."
Yeah,
in ways that you're like, "Wait, no?"
No.
It does have a couple of what I call the cook shots, because it reminds me of the shot of the cook in The Hunt for Red October, where you're like, "Oh, I wonder if that's going to come back anytime soon." Anyway, moving on from that, it's like, no, wait, that was obviously a clue. guys, over there, he did it.
That's funny, like, Juno Temple plays the dead girlfriend who we see in plenty of flashback sequences as the story plays out, partially with continuing to go back and we learn a little bit more and a little bit more about what was going on and her relationship with him and her relationship with everyone else. And it's funny, like, they have this whole, like, "God, she's the most beautiful woman alive." And I'm like, I've already seen her naked in like 18 things. So I've seen her like as a heroin addict naked in like 15 things.
Sure. I didn't know a person's penis could be jaded.
It is. I'm like, I might as well have been dating her for 2 years at this point.
Interesting. But this was kind of the most like normal character she's played in a while.
Yeah.
Well, just this being this little bumfuck mill town. She's the hottest girl there.
That's true. I mean, even with Heather Graham there as a local, a restaurant.
Heather Graham,
waitress.
Who looks weirder and weirder and more manic as the years go by. I think this is the point where David Lynch just needs to just go, "I'm just going to have you in everything I do because you automatically look like you fell out of the Red Lodge."
Yes, well, she and Winona Ryder have those permanent crazy eyes. So no matter what pick she makes, she just looks like she could pick up a knife any second.
Plus, there's some Botox has gone on there. The top of her head is now 6 inches further back than it should be.
It was weird to think Shia LaBeouf was originally supposed to play this.
Oh, sweet Moses. Although he's very credible as a devil.
That's true.
True.
Also, he might actually get horns sewn to the top of his head for his next movie premiere because he's a mental shit show.
He invented horns, you know.
Yeah, if this was going to happen for real to someone, it would probably be Shia LaBeouf, except he actually would be guilty.
He would try really hard to convince you that he's not.
One thing about the horns that I love, because as a practical, they're really good, but where they're positioned on Daniel Radcliffe's head, knowing some makeup effects guys, that is the most incredibly difficult place to attach anything and not have the actor's head fall forward all the time. And I kept going, those are really well done. And you're kind of like a bit shocked these days that, you know, there's a practical effect that makes you go, holy shit, that's actually good and well and impressive and adds to the character. It doesn't feel like they were just bolted on at some point in production. It's so dependent on that working. And they could have just gone, we'll CG something in later. But no, there's some great little moments, like when he tries to have them sawn off by the local doctor and he comes to and there's like just a saw blade embedded in the middle of them. I'm like, I'm enjoying this just because you bought that he had horns, and that could have really just bought the whole film tumbling down. And that we've not commented on that, nobody's commented on how good they looked, I think is a real testament.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't even think twice about it. You're like, yeah, they look good.
Yeah.
Even as they were, like, you see them growing, like, literally growing. Like, those shots were done really well, too.
Yeah, it's funny that this is, like, it's a standard mystery whodunit, except with magical powers.
Right.
The Catholic League is going to hate this film. This is going to be their shit-fit film of the
Finally,
year
they have a film to hate. At long last.
They've been waiting so long.
Everything's been up to their standards so far.
It's funny, like, how, like Stephen King's stuff, it has the sense of, like, the ugliness of humanity that pervades a lot of it, and, like, that's really depressing, and yet, ultimately, it does really have a good heart.
And it even literally has a scene of, like, a flashback of, remember when we were kids and we hung out as a group, and it was just like, and then you found a clown, and it was like,
there was a pie-eating contest. There's a pie-eating
contest. And you had one fat friend that everyone called fat, like, like, seriously, Joe Hill has learned a lot from his dad about, like, what children are like, apparently.
I've known several people who had a little bit of a criticism that they do info dump a huge amount of backstory in one 20-minute flashback, and that could have been handled structurally a little better or with a little bit more strength, but it really does feel like, hey, we're going to just like have our Stand By Me bit, and it's just going to be in here, and we're going to explain everything you need to know about their character interactions from when they were 10. And it's like, okay, yeah, we'll get through this. Oh, yes, I understand them now. Can we get back to where we... Oh, thanks. We're back where we need to be.
Yeah. I was waiting for the bully with the switchblade to show up.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that 20 minutes of backstory worked because in the context of the movie, it happens when he's, you know, at the doctor's office under...
But you got to find... They have to find a mechanism to do that, and it does still feel a little bit like an info dump.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have that issue, but I know some people have gone, can we get on with what's actually happening?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's other ways you could have handled that sequence.
Mm-hmm. I guess I was okay with it because I liked everything in it that was serious. Like, it was doing the tonal shifts of being very serious and being funny, and every time it was being funny... I thought it was just more goofy than anything else. Like the confessions that everybody gave, they would be so over the top. I'm like, I think I was supposed to laugh at this, and yet it's not really that funny, and it's throwing it off from where I was with it just a second ago, and now it's back to being serious again. And I was just like, man, I wish they could have picked one or the other, because the two weren't working well together.
It does kind of jump back and forth a lot, which is maddening at times.
No, I liked the confession sequences. I felt they almost had like a mid-late period John Waters feel of kind of like, you know, creepy goofiness about them. And that's actually some of my favorite bits of the film. That really worked for me.
Well, see, now here's the thing. I like them, or at least I would like them in a different movie that had more of that tone, more of like the creep show tone. But the tone offset from that was so much more mystery, tragedy, crime thriller almost. So the two things, at least for me, were just too far apart. I could have used one or the other.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, too, because it's like when you keep adding that humor, you do risk losing the audience because, as we've said a number of times before, comedy is the most subjective genre. But the thing is, you have to have that humor because otherwise people are going to sit there going, he's growing horns out of the top of his head, and no one, like, everyone's taking this so deadpan seriously that it's just ridiculous. So it's like you almost have to have that humor just as almost an acknowledgement of the fact that conceptually this is a really bizarre, you know, weirdo tale. And I mean, for me, most of the humor worked. I did have moments like Martin where I was like, so that was a little too much. But for the most part, I really liked it, especially when Radcliffe convinces all the journalists who are following him to start kicking each other's asses.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was hilarious.
I wish there was really a way to do that.
No, yeah. For me, that was why those moments of humor worked, was that he's getting people to admit to stuff, and he's kind of enjoying it. And it's like, how, you know, amongst all this horror and nastiness that's happening around him, how much is he going to embrace the fact that he does seem to be becoming the devil?
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, he's finding a joy in that. And that fight sequence, you know, Radcliffe has that little grin on his face when he does that, and I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is, and I, for me, those were character beats that really worked.
I mean, to some degree, we are watching him as the, he becomes more aware, more capable of his powers, of himself descending. Joe Anderson, who plays the older version of his brother, Terry, who has his own tragedy, really, you know, in the midst of the story. I thought he was terrific in this.
I really liked him.
And there's a sequence where he's basically being punished that is genuinely frightening.
Oh yeah.
Like, dude, and there's that, that's that point in the movie where you're like, Harry Potter, you've gone too far.
Hey, funny story. After the 13th shot last night, that's what I was seeing in my head, too. Just fucking horrifying.
That was Elijah Wood, not Harry Potter, so.
Like, trying to cast spells on him. He's like, that wasn't even my movie, dick.
It can be hard to tell the difference after the 18th slap shot.
It can.
So,
it can, indeed.
Anyway, let's go to the final thoughts and start with Richard.
I thought this was a highly entertaining morality tale that, you know, actually, yeah, had a, you know, considering the romantic lead dies before anything starts, you know, it's really quite heartfelt. I will give it 8 out of 10 Dance Macabres.
JC?
I liked it overall. I think the tonal shifts are a little maddening at times, like I said, but I think I was about to call him Harry Potter. I think Daniel Radcliffe did a pretty good job.
Your mother named you Harry Potter. I'm going to call you Harry Potter.
Some of the really tragic moments, I think, like when he's talking, like anytime he's talking to his parents and his dad tells him that his favorite thing about his son was his girlfriend. Like that's really tragic. I think that's pretty good and powerful writing in those moments. But yeah, parts of it were really goofy and kind of went back and forth too much for me. I would give it 6 out of 10 Devil Snakes.
Martin?
Well, I agree with all the positive things you guys said, but I also listed my negatives. It sounds like JC and I agree on a lot of things. The other thing was, like, I really did not like the very ending. I was just the light show and the whole, man, I am getting so tired of movies where the hero just won't take out the boss. It's like, dude, do this, and then we can move on, and everybody can be happy, and fewer people die. Get shit done. I give it 6 out of 10 hay forks.
Brian.
Next week, Martin's gonna teach us how to be a supervillain. You know what? I liked so much of this movie. There are very few moments that didn't work for me, but the moments that do really do. I love the character that Daniel Radcliffe was playing. I love his performance. I love the cinematography of this movie. It is gorgeous. It is not only is it really well shot, but they do some interesting things with angles, and there's a great transition early in the film where it like comes up from underneath and then flips over, and it's amazing. And I really enjoyed that. And I really enjoy the overall story of, sometimes to correct something that is wrong, having to descend a little bit more into darkness. That's a really interesting concept. And, I think overall I'm going to have to give this 8 out of 10 erect prancing satyrs from the far flung Greek Isles.
I think I am closest to Brian of everybody here.
I wish you'd go to another couch.
I really did enjoy this. And even while I could see that it wasn't far from flawless, the problems it did have, it didn't really bother me that much because of all the stuff that was working as well as it did.
I get that.
I agree with you, Martin, about the very end. Whereas I didn't hate it, it felt a little like, come on, man. It's like, seriously, like you had no problem doing some mean shit to other people and now you're holding back? Uh-huh. But it heartwarmed me at parts. And like all the emotional like stuff really did have a real effect. That it was ultimately a pretty good movie. I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 identical DNA sequences to Stephen King.
I think the biggest concern we should have now is that Peter Jackson's going to see the end of this movie and convince Daniel Radcliffe to star in his movie all about the Balrog. It's another Lord of the Rings movie, but it's just about the monster in the shadows. Woohoo!